Netivot Shalom on Tefillah. Netivot Shalom on Tefillah, which is meaningful. We're learning the introduction, the Petichah is introduction to Tefillah. Let's see what he has to say. Says Netivot Shalom. Taninan b'Maseches Avos. It says in Maseches Avos and Pirkei Avos. Al shlosha dvarim ha'olam omeid. The world stands on three things. Ala Torah, v'al avodah, v'al gvilut chasadim. Amazing, you know why? Because this is from Pirkei Avos. That's right.
Today.
Yeah. It's all coming together. So let's see what he has to say about it. Torah, avoda, gvilut chasadim. Torah means Torah. Avoda means service, which originally meant the korbanos, and now means tefillah. V'al gvilut chasadim, and on acts of loving kindness, acts of chesed. Upershua mefarshim, the mefarshim say on this, Shebichlal avoda, that included in the topic of avoda, of service, heim ha-korbanot bizman shebeit ha-mikdash haya kayam. Those were the korbanos in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. That was the avoda. That was where the real avoda needed to be done. V'hatfilah bizman hazeh. And nowadays, in our times, what takes the place of the avoda? What takes the place of the korbanos when we no longer have a Beis HaMikdash? That's tefillah bizman hazeh. Uva medrash amru, the medrash says, Shaya ha'olam mitrofef ad sheba Avraham v'chulei v'ad sheba Yitzchak v'tamchu ba'avodato ad shekaru aleha. That's the line. Ad v'tamchu ba'avodato v'tfilato. It says that the world was hanging in the balance. The world wasn't even able to solidify itself until when? Until Avram Avinu came along, and Yitzchak came along, and Yaakov came along, and they established tefillah. They established tefillah. It's clearly not working, and I will... Oh, and is it working, though?
No, it's not working.
I'm saying, this. We had the problem last week, so we'll send... I will send a message to the powers that be and figure out what's going on with the air at night. But it is what it is, so let's just learn. Okay. That the whole world was standing in the balance, the whole world was waiting for Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov to come along and to establish tefillah. Ve'ishli tamek ulehitbonen begodel haflagat erech hatfilah shematzinu bechazal. We have to go into the depths and to reflect on the great wonder, the great awe that Chazal have for tefillah all throughout Chazal. Ad shekaru aleh, until the Gemara in Bracho says that tefillah is dvarim haomdim birumo shel olam. That tefillah is of the things that stand in the heights of the universe. These are some of the loftiest things that there are, is tefillah. Va'inyan kulot tzarich pior. We need to understand this in its entirety. Lo mi bay l'shita tarishonim ha'sarim shetefillah hi midirabanan. Ela gam l'shita of the Rambam opposing, not just according to those postim who say that tefillah is midirabanan, but according to the Rambam who says that tefillah hi mitzvat asei min ha-Torah. That tefillah is a mitzvah mideoraita, says the Rambam. It's a mitzvah deoraita, a mitzvah from the Torah. Shne'emar, that it says, Va'avaretem et Hashem Elokeichem mipi ha-shmua lamdu sh'avoda zohi tefillah. That it says, Avaratem Hashem Elokeichem, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what the Torah says. And we're dorish from that. What does it mean to serve God? That's very generic. The Rambam says that we learn from this, that we follow the drasha that learns from this. When it says serve God, that means mitzvah deoraisa, to daven, to have tefillah, to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's avodah. That's service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean? Adayim sarich gamkin litbonein, lavin, ma'u inyana miyuchad shebiglalo hi ne'ela mishara mitzvot. We have to understand what about it is unique that it's above all other mitzvot. Ad liyotame advim shomdim mirumo shalom, to the point where it's of the things that stand in the heights of the universe. What's so significant about tefillah? What's so unique about tefillah? Gam bedivrei harishonim matzinu. We also find, moving past Chazal, later in the generations, we move down to the times of the Rishonim. We see in the Rishonim, Sheifligu me'od be'inyan tefillah, who talk at such great lengths, in such an awesome way, about tefillah. Yeter mikolin anei avodah, more so than any other type of avodah. They go on, and in the greatest heights about what tefillah is about. Ukimo shekatav ha-Rambam, like the Rambam, Maimonides says, Ketzad hi ha-kavana, Sheifne et libo mikol ha-machshavot. What's the kavana that we're supposed to aspire to in tefillah? Whether you've been davening until now, or whether now as you start Shana Aleph you're deciding to take tefillah on, or whether you haven't taken it on yet, but hopefully tonight maybe you start to take upon yourself, Bli Neder, to try to start thinking about, try to start actually saying a little bit of tefillah. He says, what's the kavana that a person is supposed to strive for in tefillah? Sheifne et libo mikol ha-machshavot. That you turn your mind away from all other thoughts. Tefillah is a meditation. There's a lot of discussion about it. I mean, Rav Aryeh Kaplan, Zatzal, he wrote a book called Meditation in Judaism, and he talks about its connection to tefillah. That tefillah, and the reality of tefillah, is meant to be a form of meditation, one of its aspects. That you're supposed to turn your mind off of all other things. To fight back against the endless stream of consciousness. One has to work on it. That's, again, he's not giving us answers yet. It's only the introduction. But that's a very, very, it's something which all of us, meaning tefillah and non-tefillah, that we know there's very little emphasis. There's not so much emphasis put on really working to control our thoughts. It happens to be that mindfulness is becoming in vogue lately, or was. Maybe it just was already passed and I just missed it. But mindfulness was definitely a thing for a while and probably still is. There's definitely a movement towards being in the present, focusing on the present, getting into the moment and recognizing that we don't want our thoughts to own us, but to begin to own our thoughts. I think it's especially become more prevalent as we live in a day and age where not only do we have the constant stream of consciousness of our mind flowing and flowing and flowing, but on top of that, which was hard enough to stop in generations past, we also now have endless notifications, things jumping in our face at all times, and there is a recognition that we need to get back to a place where we can just be present. We can just learn how to focus again. My family's not so happy about this, but especially once Corona started, and at the beginning of Corona, where like it didn't matter what WhatsApp groups you were in, they all like suddenly like lit up on fire, and everybody was sharing memes and videos and informational videos, most of which were shiok, because nobody knew what they were talking about then. We still don't know what we're talking about now, right? All of these endless things, everything blew up, and like you couldn't go 8 seconds without something else coming up, which was also very unnerving. So I did two things. The first thing is I left like 90% of the WhatsApp groups that I was a part of. I was like, I can't, I'm out. And I started putting my phone permanently on Do Not Disturb. It was when I realized that my phone was owning me for real, in a way that it had never had in the past. It had owned me in the past, but in a way it never had in the past. And now I always leave it on Do Not Disturb because, first of all, I'm home most of the time, so if anybody really needed to get to me, it was really only my wife and my children. Again, my family in the States notwithstanding, who was not happy that whenever they called, I never even knew that they were calling. But I would call, I was always calling them back. But like when I sat there, if I'm sitting down and I'm preparing Shirim over the summer, I want to just be in the zone of Torah, and I don't want to think about it. I want my mind to be distracted by other things. If I'm sitting and learning Daf Yomi, I want to be able to focus on the Daf and let me distract by other things. Honestly, even though I'm sitting around and just chilling out, then I'm choosing to recharge and chill out. I don't want endless notifications. So that's even, again, from the external side. That's easier. Easier and harder. I challenge all of you to put your phone on Do Not Disturb. For most of you, that's like might be far more disturbing than the concept of Do Not Disturb. It's like, oh my God, but I won't know what's happening next. Is that still what you're feeling right now? Or because you're also overloaded on the phones, you don't mind missing things on your phone now? What's going on now in the psyche of adolescents in 20, of seminary students in 2020.
I'm on it less than I was
at the time of the day. When it's sleep, like the night in America, then it's not that I don't.
When no notifications are coming in, I'm totally fine putting it on Do Not Disturb. Excellent. Great. I'm glad we've grown as a society. When nothing's happening, I totally put it on Do Not Disturb. Anybody else? So that's huge. I've noticed that a lot less of you are on phones this year than last year. That's been clearly a shift, which I think is awesome. It's sad that it came from the place that it came from. I think that you all are just burnt out from your phones, which took a lot of effort on the world's part. But it's still great that you're able to get off your phones, and I hope that it sticks with you for a long time, meaning take that as a gift from this tkufa, that you know that you don't need your phone every second and that you'll survive if you pay attention to a shir, and that the world will go on. But again, this is a new concept. You know, last year, that was one of the biggest complaints from one of the other Rebbeim. He doesn't teach anymore. One of the other Knights of Rebbeim was not here anymore. He would make him crazy. he would like make them, he would like kick them out if they were on their phones. And I was like, meanwhile, I'm like, why? If they're on their phones, they're not talking to each other. I'll finally just stop talking so I can teach. So everybody has their own challenges in the classroom. But he like, it made him crazy. And to me, I'm like, whatever. Like, they're on their phones. Like, that's just part of the nature of the beast. And like, you guys, I don't see that as much. I mean, yes and no. Like, it definitely happens, but not like it happened last year or years past. But in any event, you're at, I mean, you were asking stream of consciousness. The idea there is like, again, it doesn't matter whether it's external and you say, like, you know what, I want to take it. Meaning, this is something where I can sort of like, I can actually see it and hold it and feel it, and I can, you know, flick it up, and I can press the button that says do not disturb. I can click airplane mode. I can even, lo alinu, turn it off, right? Like, I can actually do that. But the same thing, like, again, use that as a model. You could do that with your thoughts with enough effort. It may not be, there's no button, but both take effort, both take psychological effort to, like, when you recognize that thoughts are coming upon you, to say, like, okay, either, there's two ways to take it, either to fight it back, or to say, you know what, I accept this is bothering me, let's just think it out, ride it out, and then let it go. But there's a lot of tactics. Look into mindfulness, look into meditation, look into even discussions of how to focus in tefillah, which are all good ones, are all borrowing from those things in a way, or maybe those things are borrowing from the original ways you were supposed to daven. Depends on chicken and egg, right? But we can own our thoughts. We can decide what we want to think about. And it's so helpful in life. So helpful in life. When you have a thought that streams through that's an inappropriate thought, a thought that's of something which you don't want to think about. When you have a thought that streams through that's a depressing thought and you don't want to get down in the dumps. Like, you can control how you think. It's something we don't talk about enough, but it's so, so important to own what you think. And he's saying here in tefillah, that's the goal. Again, he's saying this is the goal, not that it's easy to achieve, but that in tefillah, what's the kavana? That you pull away all other thoughts. You knock out everything else. There are Mefarshim who explain that in Shacharis, that's why we have Psukei Dezimra. Psukei Dezimra means a lot of things. I mean, Psukei doesn't. Psukei just means Psukim, right? The verses of Psukim. Mazet Dezimra. What is Psukim of Zimra? So the simple pshat is Psukim of Zemer. What's Zemer?
Song.
Psukim of song and praise and poetry. And that's certainly what it is. There's Halalukas and there's Psukim and Hodes. There's amazing, amazing, amazing Psukim. And certainly the Halalukas in the middle of the sort of centerpiece, Ashrei and the Halalukas in the middle of Psukei Dezimra. But there's other Mefarshim who say, other Mefarshim Tefila who say, no. You know what Psukei Dezimra is? Lizmor in Hebrew also means to prune or to cut away. Like if you were to go out into your garden.
Yes.
Like Mrs. Katz just said today that when you go, it's just wanted to quote her. That when you go and then you go, you're pruning. Meaning like when you go out to your garden or in your backyard and you have like bushes that are growing, you know, in a way that's just not pretty anymore. You go and you trim the excess and you rein it back in. So that there are those who explain Psukei Dezimra are psukim that are meant to cut away all the excess thoughts so you can focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu as you move into Birkos Kriyat Shema, as you move into Shemona Esrei, that you're cutting away all those excess thoughts. And it's giving you time, meaning again, if that's part of the meditation, Psukei Dezimra is part of the meditation. That's getting you in the zone. You're thinking about it. If you're able to work towards it, not you personally, all of us, to understand the words, to get into Psukei Dezimra, to get excited about Psukei Dezimra, to understand Psukei Dezimra. The more and more you think about those psukim, then when you get to Birkos Kriyat Shema, then you're joining the malachim to dive into a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then you get to Shemona Esrei, and you're just standing with a Kadosh Baruch Hu alone, meaning you're getting there. It's a process. It's a process of getting there. But that's what the Rambam says, back inside. The Rambam says, Shiach, yes?
The Rambam says, so is that for a man or for a woman?
How the Doraisa Durabanan thing works is complicated. The approach of the majority of Mefarshim, as I understand it and remember it, not having looked it up recently, is that the Rambam holds it's Doraisa. The Ramban, Nachmanides, holds that it is Durabanan, and that we assume that... we assume that it is, I believe, Dirabanan, like the Ramban, except like if it's a time of like difficulty or tragedy and everybody is required to scream out to ask Kadosh Baruch Hu for help, I think there it's the Rambam is Deraisa, but whatever, we follow the Ramban who says that it's Dirabanan. However, and this is where it gets interesting, is Ramban, Nachmanides says, since it's a rabbinic construct, since it's Midirabanan, when they created it, what did they say? They said, well, it's to cry out to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and to daven to Hashem because we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mercy. Do women also need a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mercy? Yes. So when the Rabbanon created, when Chazal created tefillah, they made both men and women obligated, even though it's time-bound, because we both need rachamim from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why both men and women are obligated, have an equal obligation, certainly at this stage of life, have an equal obligation in tefillah, certainly for shacharis and mincha.
But is it different beings as well, like the difference in obligations?
meaning not for men and women, meaning there's... Right, so in terms of that, so two things are that. One is the halacha is different for some Sfardim, who only have to daven Shachris or Mincha, and the halacha changes for women who are wholly engaged with and need to take care of their children. If it's a two-income family, and between their work and their children, they have no time, that's the same thing. B'shato mutzlachat, you should find a husband, get married, have shalom bayis, happy family, have kids, easily, and wonderful family. When you get there, you can call back your college teacher or your seminary teacher and ask, how does this work now that I am married and have kids? But until that point comes, you have, if you're looking Ashkenazi. If you're Ashkenazi, you have to daven. You have an obligation to daven Shachris and Mincha. Equal to my obligation, daven Shachris and Mincha. There's no difference. There's no difference. We both need a Kadosh Baruch Hu's help. We both need, probably me more than you, true, but still, we both need a Kadosh Baruch Hu's help. Okay? Tov. Beseder. Back to the Rambam. Second line. Ukemoshe katav ha-Rambam. The Rambam says second line of the second paragraph. Ketzad hiya kavana, what's the kavana? Sheifnet libo mikol machshavo, to turn your way from everything else, your mind away from everything else. V'yir'eh atzmo ki'ilu hu omeid neged hashchina, and to imagine yourself like you're standing opposite the Shechina. That's what we're supposed to imagine yourself like you're standing opposite the Shechina. My Rebbe once said that to me. It's like in a different, little bit of a different context, but the lesson, the message remains true. He said, Rabbi, why did the Kadosh Baruch Hu give you an imagination? He gave it to you to use it, but to use it for Kedusha. You're supposed to imagine. Imagine, he was using a different example, but it's the same idea. Imagine, use your imagination. If you're not there yet, none of us are there yet. If you're not there yet, imagine what it must be like as you take three steps back. And you take three steps toward into Shemon Esrei. Imagine, close your eyes and imagine that you're taking three steps back into Shemayim to stand in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Even if you don't hold that beyond the word Hashem Svatai Tiftach, and then you're already spaced out. Even for those 3 seconds, to have that in your mind, to build that image, to build that concept that when you take three steps forward, I'm imagining I'm standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The more you do it, the more you're going to love it, the farther it's going to extend into your Shemona Esrei. Use your imagination. It's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki'ilu hu omeid neged ha-shechina, like you're standing in front of the Shechina. The Ocham, and further on, the Rambam says in the next halacha, ki'ilu hu omeid ba-shamayim, imagine that your mom is standing in the heavens. Can you imagine that if you're davening and you say, and when you're envisioning that, again, that's all part of the same thing, that's all part of the meditation, right? You asked about how you control your thoughts. You know, like when you have that moment, you're sitting there and you're imagining you're in Shemayim, you're in control then. If that's your vision, if that's what you're focusing on, that you're standing there and you're taking 3 steps into Shemayim, it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. Al-Pi Chassidus, I forget exactly who the story was about. I think I know what it's about, but I don't want to misquote it. Whatever, this whole story may be butchered, but I'm going to do the best I can and the point gets through. I often do that with stories. I love stories, but I can never remember the exact details, so they don't sound real. But they're all real. I'll tell you if it's not a real story. There was a tzaddik one time who started to daven, and I'm definitely getting the story wrong, but the idea still stands the same. And he went and he tore his shirt. And he said, somebody said, what did you do? Why did you tear your shirt? He said, again, I think that this story was a little bit different, but he said that I went and I was davening at the Kotel. And he said, no, you weren't. You were right here. He said, no, but in my mind, I was at the Kotel. Now, it doesn't mean that you should tear your shirt when you imagine that you're at the Kotel. But the idea there is that we are where our mind is at. That's actually the most powerful place that we are. Where we are currently doesn't really matter. It's where our mind is at that is the most important. That freedom of the mind is the most important. It's an incredible concept. You are where your mind is. You can, lo aleinu, be in shir and be steeped in tum'ah. You can be in bidud, locked in your room, and you could say, no, I want this shir to be recorded and sent to me, so that way while I'm in bidud, I can close my eyes and imagine that I'm in classroom 2 in night theater, even though I missed it in person. And you're there.
That was to you.
And you're there. And you're there. But that's the power of it. That's the real power of it. You are where your mind is at. It's such a powerful concept. And something that we need to reflect on. You know? Especially today when we can't go all the places we want to go or wanted to go. You can close your eyes and you can be there. And it's very real. It's very, very real. Jeannie.
So if you're davening and like daydreaming, then you're not actually davening?
I'm not going to say you're not davening. I'm not saying your tefillah doesn't count. Again, let's recognize also that like the bar is so low that you could trip over it that it's on the floor. Meaning like, unfortunately, we're starting from a very, very low place. So first of all, again, and this is not a judgment, my understanding from years past is that it's very likely that most of you aren't even davening yet. Or maybe doing one tefillah. And if it's chakras, then you're picking and choosing like whatever 8 minutes of chakras that you want to do. And that's not it's not a diss at any of you. Meaning you're starting to do more. Or maybe you're doing one tefillah. Or maybe now you're thinking about taking on a second tefillah. Or maybe you're like, you know what, it's not speaking to me and I'm not going to start it until next month. I don't know. So, you know, Jeannie, like, it's if the fact that you're making the choice to daven is step one, but once you've been davening for a while and you get into a groove, yes, there is an expectation, as in all areas of Avodat Hashem, that you always want to be striving for more. In every area. It's not just tefillah. So I wouldn't, because of where we're starting from, don't downplay the fact that you're just choosing to daven at all. But if you're somebody who's been davening, well, let's say you are somebody, which might be the case, let's say you are somebody who you went to a school where they davened every morning. Let's say you come from a family where you have davened every morning for the last 15 years, for the last 10 years. Then for you, whoever you may be in this room, for you, yes, it's time to bump it up a notch. That's not good enough. It's time to take it to the next level. And to start working to add a little more kavanah. A little more kavanah. When I was in Shana Aleph, I wasn't davening beforehand, b'chlal. When I was growing up, I basically almost never davened. I remember it was one of my goals for Shana Aleph. I was like, when I come to Shana Aleph, like I for me it was also sad to even say it, I was to put on tefillin. I very rarely put on tefillin before I went to Shana Aleph. I think I even told the story in this room that there was like finally like at November, December time, I was like so proud of myself. I'd reached my goal. I remember walking into the dining hall that morning and I was like, I've done it. I'm davening every single day with tefillin. This was one of my goals. I made it. And I felt so good. I felt so good. I took another few bites. I remember this like clear as day. And it like hit me like a ton of bricks. I was like, shoot, there's also Mincha and Maariv. Like, it didn't even dawn on me as part of the goal. You know, it depends on what background you come from. I didn't even process the fact that I was like, Bechlal, not even davening Mincha and Maariv yet. It was just like, I made chakras. And that's it. And that, like, celebrate the victories. But yes, after that, I think it's Shana Bet, I bought Pathway to Prayer. I happen to think that it's a very useful tool if it speaks to you. It certainly can be a useful tool. I bought Pathway to Prayer for the weekday davenings. Anybody ever seen that book? I have it for weekday also. It's more expensive for a lot less content, but that's fine. Meaning that doesn't change the fact that it's a very useful tool. The Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur one is huge, and it's like, I still daven with the Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur one every year. I love it. And I got the weekday one, and what I did was, is every week for 18 weeks, I focused on one bracha. One bracha. And every week, I tried to hold on to some of the meditation and some of the focus of the previous bracha and brachot. But that week was at least focus in three times a day, every day, focus in on that one bracha, and say it slowly, and look at the English side, and get the words out, understand what they mean, think about what they mean to you. And I still carry with me what I gained from Shana Bet years ago, over a decade ago. I still carry that with me. The messages and the meaning that I took out of it when I gave a week to that bracha. Again, everything is a win, Jeannie. Everything that you add is a win. But that's definitely the goal. That's definitely what we're striving for, is to add more kavana. The bigger picture kavana of standing before Hashem, standing before the Shekhinah, standing in Shemayim, and the lower, the more, again, not higher and lower, the more broad and the more specific kavanah of what do the words mean and what do they mean to me. Good? Clear?
Yeah.
Thank you. Tov. Let's keep it going. Fourth line in the second paragraph. V'chein hu b'Rabbeinu Yonah. And the Rabbeinu Yonah also says, Sheyachshov bilibo ki'ilo omid bashamayim. Similarly, he says, just like the Rambam said, that a person should think in their heart that it's like they're standing in Shamayim. Ki'inyan she'amru ha'kadmonim. Like the earlier sages said, says Rabbeinu Yonah, pshot gufcha mi'al nishmatcha. Right, you thought that was intense, genie. Says the Rabbeinu Yonah, you know what we should really be thinking of? You know what we should really get to? You should get to a place where you're able for your soul to leave your body behind. To shed your physical body and just be as a soul standing from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Even the room was shocked by that, right? That your soul is just able, that you're totally disconnected from your body and just your soul is standing before a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And v'shulchan aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch says even further than that. Katuva mechaber lahalacha. The mechaber brings down, this is Shulchan Aruch, halacha lamaisa. He doesn't require you to do it, but he brings it down as halacha lamaisa sefer. Another svarim. He brings down halacha lamaisa. He tells you about what they used to do. This is to strive for. V'chein hayu osim chasidim ba'anshei maisa. The original chasidim, not the Bekesh Hashtrimal ones, the original, meaning the chasidim rishonim, the original, the pious people of old. The Anshei Maisa, the people of great renown of the earlier generations, Shayu mit bodedim, they would focus internally. They would be by themselves and just turn inward. Umichavnim betvilatam, and they would have such deep kavana when they would daven. Ad shayu magiim lihit pashtut agashmiut, till they would remove their entire physicality. Ulitgabrut koach asichli, and their whole transcendental side would light up. Disconnected from their physical bodies. They weren't thinking about anything physical. They weren't thinking about how they were standing. They weren't thinking about if they were hungry. They weren't thinking about if they were thirsty. They weren't thinking about what they were going to do when they got to work. They weren't thinking about nothing. They were just totally disconnected from their physicality and just living up there in Shemayim. Ad shayu magi'im karov lema'alat ha'nivu'ah. Till they got close to Nevuah itself. Till they got close to tasting prophecy itself. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Says the Shulchan Aruch. Yejin. There are many different... First of all, I don't know which Hasidim you're talking about. The Hasidim Achronim or the Hasidim Rishonim? Those are not the Hasidim Rishonim. That's what I was saying. When we talk about Hasidim, that's what we're talking about. It's from the Baal Shem Tov on. They, by the way, also had and have tremendous Kavanah and Tefillah. It's not a knock against them. I just want to clarify what he's saying. Chazal the Rishonim referred to Hasidim Rishonim. It's the early pious people. It's people who they considered the pious ones. Nothing to do with Bekesh Hashtrimal, singing, dancing, chassidus, nothing to do with that. That was just, not a knock on what came later. Tremendous kavanah and tefillah by true chassidim. But that's not what we're talking about. There was no divide between chassidim and mismandim yet. These were just the people who everybody looked up to. The chassidim rishonim. Uvichovat ha-levavot, in the chovat ha-levavot it says, shar cheshbon ha-nefesh, katuv zal, he said, he says, my brothers and sisters, hear me. He says, you have to understand that the kavanah and tefillah is what it's all about, is completely becoming a nefesh, just being your nefesh, just experiencing your nefesh. It's totally giving your soul over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, subjugating it before Him, through His greatness, in praise and thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, totally giving yourself over to Him spiritually. That's a real tefillah. That's really getting into tefillah. Your tefillahs are all real to us. Your tefillahs are all real to us. But that's what the goal of ultimate tefillah is. Uvishari Avod of Rabbeinu Yonah, another quote. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Katuv, Hamit Palel Hu Ki Ish Mevin Korban Lifnei, Mevi Korban Lifnei. When a person davens, it's like their mamish bringing a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'nafsho Kshura Udvuka Be'elyonim, and their soul is bound to the upper realms. The Olam HaElyon, to the upper world. Next side of the page, the other side of the page. Olam HaNishama Ve'olam HaRuchani, to the world of souls and the world of spirituality. V'zecha Shekatuv B'chana, and that's what it says about Chana, who taught us the foundations of Tefillah. Chana in Shmuel Aleph, Veshpochet Nafshi, I pour out my soul. Shaita mitpalelet bechol liba, that she would daven with her whole heart. Ki'ilu hikriva nafsha, like she was giving her soul as the korban. We don't have animals. You know what you have to give to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Your soul. Your soul is your korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazinan, what we see from this is diyesh inyanim niskavim betfila. Asher lav kol mocha savilda, There are things that are so lofty in tefillah which no mind can really understand. Kilu omeid bashamayim, like you're standing in the heavens. V'karov v'dargat ha-nevuah, and that you're close to nevuah itself, to prophecy itself. U'bechinat klot ha-nefesh, like your whole nefesh is going up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chol zitzarich be'or ma'ra'u al-kacha. We now need understanding, and this is the introduction. Why? Why is tefillah so deep? Why is tefillah so high? Why is this true of tefillah? What's so deep about tefillah that this is the reality that you needed to get into and that it can bring you to? What is it about tefillah? Next paragraph. The Hagaon HaKadosh, Rav Chaim Vital, the great Kabbalist Rav Chaim Vital said, Kotev shebidoreinu shenitkalelu ha'avirim ein itzal inatzel meyitzer hara ela al yedei tefillah b'kavana. Rav Chaim Vital says very deeply, he says, that in our generation, where we live in such a reality of spiritual impurity, where the air is in a place where it's not clean anymore. There's no way to overcome the Yetzer Hara. There's only one way to overcome it. He says the only way to overcome the Yetzer Hara is through tefillah. The only way to stop the Yetzer Hara is to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to overcome the Yetzer Hara. It's the only way to overcome the Yetzer Hara. Nishayish ba'adam nishama ruach v'nefesh v'nefesh kovah l'guf yoter v'yavshar lach ni'ah elo yedei tefillah. Because without getting into the nuances of the Kabbalistic structures here, that we have many layers of our soul, and the only way to really connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only way to really leave our soul, our body behind, and connect on a spiritual way, that's only through tefillah. Uve'or dvarav hakadoshim, and to understand what he says, Yesh la'avin al pi ma'amar maran v'veit avram zogotegen alena. We can understand this based on what the Slonimer said. Amamar chazal. Chazal say, va'avadatam et Hashem elokecha b'chol levavecha. Chazal say, that quotes the pasuk, va'avadatam et Hashem elokecha b'chol levavechem. You have to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your heart. Serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of your heart. What does that mean? What? Right, what does it mean? That's what, excellent. It says that in Shema. What does it mean? Serve God with all of your heart. That's a very vague mitzvah. Have you served God with your heart today? I don't know. Have I? I don't know. What does that mean? So Chazal tell us what it means. Chazal say, explaining that line of Kriyat Shema. Ezo avoda shebalev, zo tefila. What is avoda shebalev? That's tefila. It's an avoda. We need to remember and recognize that it's an avoda. No, I have this. I tell this story a lot when I talk about tefillah. It's like it struck me so hard when I had this interaction with this individual. I said, you know, that when I was in smicha, and there was a guy who was basically he would come to davening on time. And these are people who are committed to Torah and mitzvos. We've done yeshiva in university. Now we're on to smicha. Like, this is already a select group of people. And we're sitting there learning. We're sitting there every morning, go to davening. And every morning, he was learning through all of tefillah. He'd be mumbling the words, and he'd just be learning. He'd be learning from a sefer the whole time. He'd never had a sitter open in front of him. And a point that I hope you took away, for those of you who are in Seder Vav, from our Seder Vav class, I have no busha in these areas. For me, like, I want to understand. So this guy was considered like one of the top guys in the Beis Medrash. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how can a top guy, what makes him a top guy in the Beis Medrash? Because I get that he like learned really intellectually, but like, he's not davening. What's his take on tefillah? So I went up to him, and again, politely, it wasn't meant to be adversarial. We talked about it in Seder Vav, like, you want to know, you ask questions because you want to get to truth. And I said to him, like, I'm so curious. I was like, why do you learn during tefillah? Like, it's an opportunity to daven. I'm curious, like, why do you learn during tefillah? And his answer was, and it stayed with me to this day. I remember him looking back at me, like, just, you know, totally nonchalantly. He's like, well, I mean, tefillah doesn't come so naturally to me. It's not so easy for me. Learning does, and I love to learn. So I'd rather just learn instead of daven, because I learn better and I learn well, and I don't, you know, davening's hard. So I learned during davening. And that was it. And I wanted to grab him by the shirt and throw him against the wall and say, if you're going to learn during davening, open up the first page, the first amud of Masechet Ta'anit. Open up the first amud. and look inside at the words when it says this drasha, where it says, Eizohi avoda shebelev haveomer zo tfila. Tfila is an avoda. Tfila is meant to be work. Tfila is meant to be an avoda. It's something which not just this guy had an issue with, but so many of us struggle with. And I talk to Shana Aleph students about this all the time. All the time. When I was in college all the time. It crosses all generations. Wherever you're a rabbi in life, you're going to talk to people about this. When people come to you and they say, it's so hard to daven. I don't feel it when I'm davening. I don't feel inspired when I'm davening. I don't feel the geschmack when I daven. However it is you phrase it. And it's sad because those people miss the point. Tefillah is not for you. You don't daven so you can feel spiritual. You don't daven so you feel enlightened. You don't daven so you feel like, so you feel super high on Judaism. That's not what tefillah is. Tefillah is defined by the Torah and by Chazal as an avoda. It's something you need to work for. It's part of your service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, like an eved before a master, like a servant before a master. My Rebbe said very powerfully, and I think this is true, and this may give it a little bit more context. If you walk out of a tefillah and you feel spiritually inspired, you feel uplifted, that's a sign that you probably davened well. But that's a symptom that you served God properly. The goal isn't the feeling, but it's not wrong if you walk out with that feeling. It's awesome when you walk out spiritually inspired, spiritually lifted from a tefillah. That's great, but that's not why you're davening. You're not davening for yourself, that's self-service. That's avodat atzmeich. That's serving yourself. You're davening for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's not easy. To say, I learn during tefillah because it's easy and davening's hard, with such a pathetic response from a budding rabbi who's going to be in a shul. How is he supposed to inspire his congregants to daven? Oh, don't do it, just pick up a sefer? Really? Really? We all have to work on that, to recognize tefillah isn't something that God gave us to make us feel good. It's an opportunity to give us to serve Him. And it's something required to work on. Molly.
So how do you know if you're in tefillah is a good davening if you can't tell by the feeling?
Again, the feeling is an indication that it was good. But if you walk out and you have a good tefillah, even if you don't have that feeling, if you know that you spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you know that you kept your mind focused, if you know that you paid attention to the words, if you know that you put in, you said the words slowly, you weren't rushing and saying it faster to get to davening fast, to get to breakfast faster. You weren't davening and rushing to get to shir faster. You weren't davening and rushing in order to get to your phone in order to get in a few more WhatsApps and voice notes before the day starts. Meaning, you know yourself when you've given a good tefillah. I know when I have a bad tefillah. I know when I have a mediocre tefillah, which is when I at least say all the words. That's most of my days are mediocre tefillahs, especially nowadays, where I just, like, I'm not sleeping enough, and, like, it's just, like, a miracle that I get to shul. Like, again, back to Jeannie's point, know where you're holding, and, like, for me, that's a win right now, is that I go to shul, I go early, I'm not sleeping the klal right now, so, like, I'm just overtired, I can't focus on anything, but it's like, I don't care. I'm going to start, even before I learn, I'm going to start, meaning I'm not going to learn until then, because I don't know how long my davening's going to take, I don't want any pressure on my davening. And I start, and I say Psuke de Zimra. And I say it as slow and as focused as I can. And these days it's not so focused. But I know I'm not skimping on it. Because I do it first. And I'm done with brachos and psukei de zimra 15, 20 minutes before we even get to baruchu. And then I open up a sefer and then learn until baruchu. But I do it that way, dafka, so that way I don't miscalculate because I'm not, you know, my head's not totally there and I don't miscalculate the time. I don't start too early or start too late or whatever it is. And I can just focus on brachos, korbanos, psukei de zimra. However long it takes. And some days are good days. And some days are mediocre days. But Baruch Hashem, I don't have very many bad days. But you know which ones are which. Every once in a while, certainly 6 months ago, I had great days. I missed those great days. I can't wait for those great days again. Hopefully tomorrow. Maybe tomorrow will be the day. But you, when you start to get into it, you know when you're really being ovid and when you're not. And what the level of ovid is required. Again, for me right now, in my mind, maybe I'm selling myself short. Maybe after 120 I'll be called to task for this. For me right now, my ovid is keep going, even though I'm just spaced out. I'm just spaced out. I'm just exhausted. mentally, emotionally, physically exhausted when I schlep into shul. Again, you know, Nate's right now is at 6:40. I schlep into shul when the stars and the moon are still out at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I sit down in the darkness and I flick on the lights. It's actually nice. I flick on the lights. I set up the shul. I open up all the windows. I separate all the tables. I put out all the chairs. I sit down, put on my towels, put on my tefillin, and then just make sure to just daven. Just daven right now. Like, that's a win. Don't sell yourself short. That's a win. Right now, for me, that's a win. It depends on where you're holding. But you can, when you start actually getting into it, you can tell when's what, you know? No, there's something else. Gilana, okay. You had your hand up first.
Okay, so if you're saying that you're not really davening for yourself, like you're not davening for yourself, you're davening for Hashem, all you really have to do is say the words, so what's so hard about it? Like, why do people struggle so much with it if all they're doing is saying the words?
Because that's not enough. We just read that's not enough. Imagine you're in Shemayim, cut away all other thoughts, totally give yourself over to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, leave your body behind. To really get into tefillah is hard. To really pour yourself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hard. I shall put a hand in the back, I'll take it in a second. See what he says next. I actually remember learning this piece before. Then what he says next, he gives a mashal. Again, it's not a direct answer to your question, but it's an answer to your question. He says very beautifully, that it's like when you go to work the field, right? Imagine now we're really talking about, you know, get your sweat, get sweaty and get your hands dirty and like really get into it, right? That it's like going out and working the field, right? That it's like going out and working in the field. What do you do first? First you have to plow. Ve'achar kach zor'im. And then afterward, you go and you plant. First, you plow, you soften the earth, and then you put the seeds in the ground. Ve'achar kach mashkim mayim. Then you have to water the seeds in the ground. Ve'rak az matchil mitzmoach. And only then, do you start seeing things begin to sprout. He says, and again, not directly answering your question, but answering your question. Kimokein b'tfilah, so beautiful. So too by tefillah. Reshit, hear this. This is the avoda of tefillah. Reshiti harishah amuka liftoach alev. First, we have to plow our hearts to open them up. Our hearts are rock hard or solid, like dead earth. We need to go and work and soften and plow and open up our hearts. So many of us, maybe all of us, when we sit down and we walk into tefillah, we're walking in with hearts that are closed. We need to open up our hearts, plow them, not just like, oh, open up your heart. No, we need to mamish on our own work to open ourselves up emotionally. Open ourselves up in terms of our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Break through that heart of stone. V'achar kach machnisim divrei atfiyah b'alev. Then to say the words, but to mamish, not just say them, not just do, and this is where the words come, this is where the phrase comes from, not just do lip service. That's what lip service means, that's why it's a negative term. Lip service means where you are saying the words, but you're not thinking about them and you don't care about them. Don't just give me lip service. That's what it means. Meaning, don't just say it, mean it. That comes from tefillah, that comes from davening, comes from prayer. Don't just let it be lip service. Go and say the words in such a way that now that you've softened your heart, to go and take those words of tefillah, and those are the seeds. Plant those words in your heart. Plant ashrei in your heart. Plant halleluka in your heart. Plant Ahava Rabbah in your heart. Plant Shema Yisrael in your heart. Plant Shmona Esrei in your heart. Plant it. Bring it inside of you. Bring it inside of you. Ki Azriah, that's the planting. V'achar kach shofchim lev kamayim nochach pnei Hashem. They needed a water. What's the watering? That's when you just explode and you pour out your heart like water before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. All of the things that you put in, you start pouring out your heart like water before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hiashka, that's the watering. Then he beautifully says, V'az matzmiach yeshuot. And then what begins to sprout? Yeshuot begins to sprout. Salvation begins to sprout. We're all having tough times. You want to find Matzmiach Yeshua. You want to bring about Yeshua. You want to get out of whatever it is that we're in. Daven. Daven. Plow your heart open. Plant the words of tefillah. Shifri kamayim libeich. Pour out like water. And watch the Yeshua grow. Watch it burst forth from inside of you and spread to the whole world. That's what he's saying. Beautiful, beautiful mashal. Beautiful, beautiful nishal. There were a couple of hands. Yeah. There are definitely those who do say so, yes. I'm a little bit more old school in the sense that I'm like, no, you're in Shana Aleph. You have literally no other responsibilities other than learning and davening. Literally, that's it. Otherwise, you have no responsibilities. Everybody shows up for the other things too. But that's the only responsibilities you have, davening and learning. So then this is the opportunity to take the time, not just, I mean, listen, if that's where you want to start, again, there are many, many people who say, yes, just go for it. I'd say, no, slow it down, and then get a sitter that's, you know, interlinear, or the interlinears make me a little nauseous because, like, they're going the other. I can't. It's like English going Hebrew, and I'm like, I literally get nauseous when I'm reading it. I track them down, the old Mitsuda sitters, where it has line by line. It gives you a line of Hebrew, and then parallel to it is a line of English. So it's not like each word is going in the wrong direction. They're just like two lines. Each phrase, and like, I still say the Hebrew and look at the English to this day to keep making sure that I'm following the words, even though I can speak Hebrew just fine. Like, just to keep focused in tefillah. Maybe it's a good thing, maybe it's a bad thing, I need to rethink that, but I've been doing that for ages, and like, that sitter works for you. Find a sitter that works for you. And sit there and learn tefillah. Pick up a book on tefillah. Start by just translating the words from, you know, an art scroll, or a mitsuda, whatever the other one. The Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks one. Koran, thank you. The Koran sitter, whatever sitter you prefer, doesn't matter. Whatever sitter you prefer, you know. But like, get to know the English and then read a book on going deeper into it. There are a bunch of svarim out there in English, Hebrew, English, about going deeper into it. So I would say yes, you're 100% right. Yes, if that's how you're going to find kavana, then there are many who say yes. I'm a little bit more old school, so I would say no. Fight to understand the Hebrew, especially in Shana Aleph. But both are totally legitimate, and the goal is kavana. Yeah. Yes, and good. That being said, yes. Yeah, well, trust me, he's there. He's there. Because the avoda is on our part, meaning the focus in any relationship is not, in any healthy relationship, the focus is never, what can you do for me? It's what can I do for you. That's any good, healthy relationship. That's the foundation of relationship. We've talked about that in this class before. So I'm saying, so when you come to Davin, you're focusing on how can I connect to you and give to you. And automatically, if that relationship is healthy and functioning with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bezrat Hashem, it is, he's focusing on, so to speak, on giving back to you and giving to you. But you don't worry about him. If you care about him, your goal is to connect to and give to him. I mean, again, when you want to start thinking about tefillah, like what you're saying, meaning thinking about it, meaning I was trying to avoid doing too much of the it's like a marriage and a relationship thing, because I know that you may not appreciate that at this point, amongst other people in this class, because we use that mashal a lot. I'm not coming out, I'm saying like we've been using that mashal a lot very heavily in the beginning of the year. Because you use the example, right? Imagine that, yes, it is talking to somebody. Imagine that you've had a really long day. I'll say this. I had a really long day, right? I've had a really long day. And let's say I taught morning seder in Lev, and it goes through the afternoon. And then I had not afternoon seder in Lev at Torah today. And then I ran from afternoon seder, and I was late, and I came and fell into afternoon seder at Tiferet. Then I went home and had like 15 minutes to have dinner and put a kid to sleep. And then I gave an alumni shiur on Zoom. And then schwitzing, because for some reason there's a heat wave at the end of October in Beit Shemesh. So I'm schwitzing, giving the Zoom shiur in the room, because it's like 100 degrees in the room. I then get on my scooter, which Baruch Hashem cools me down a little bit, so I'm only like a little bit frightening. I'm able to come into the room and now give night seder until I pass out. Then I get home tonight. And my wife says, listen, I really want to talk to you. Okay. Based on a true story 20 minutes from now. Right? She's great. She goes like, listen, I really need to talk to you. And I were to go, you know what? You're right. I hear you. Let's talk. Let's talk. Okay? I hear you. Uh-huh. I'm with you. Yeah, totally. Oh, my God. That's, you know, wow. Anyway, you might want to brush my teeth while we're talking. No, I'm with you. I just, my breath, you know, let me wash my face a little bit. Anyway, I'm really sorry for you or happy for you. I don't remember which one, but both maybe. I'm both. And I hope it gets better and that you continue to feel good. Right. But, you know, we're laughing at that, but to be fair, okay, Think back to your last Shemona Esrei. How different was that? Be real for a second. How different was your last Shemona Esrei, where you mumbled a couple of words and were like, peace out, God, that was really meaningful, thanks, see you in a few hours. It's not so different. Some of you are being real, because I can see the expressions on your faces. Some of you are being real. Like, that's, you know, and again, I'm not dissing it, I'm saying look at it from a different perspective. Meaning, yes, when you go in, it's not always easy to talk to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not, you don't always feel in the zone. He said, I care about you, and I want to talk to you 3 times a day every day. And sometimes that's harder, and sometimes it's easier. And there are some times where I sit with my wife, and I'm totally in the zone, and she's totally in the zone, and we can talk for hours. For hours. And there are some times where I really need to talk, and she'll just pass out on the couch, and that's okay. It's okay, because it happens. And there's sometimes she just want to talk, and I'm just like a day like today. If she were to ask me that today, I would say, like, I love you so much that I can't talk to you right now, because I just won't be able to hear you. And I want to hear you. And I want to hear you. Kadosh Baruch Hu says 3 times a day. 3 times, and honestly, if she's really upset, of course I'm going to be there for her. Like, and again, there's nothing she's upset about. This is a totally fictional construct. This isn't actually happening. But, you know, like, but if I come and she's like, I need to talk to you, the answer is, of course. And there have been many, many nights I've set up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning when I had a full day of teaching the next day. Why? Because if she needs to talk, then she needs to talk. And she's done the same for me. She's done the same for me. Why? Because that's what the relationship is. When I go in to talk to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to go and to work to share, to be real, to be honest, to be present, to not mumble a couple of words. God's not interested in you mumbling. Not you personally, anybody. He's not interested in mumbling. He cares that you are going and working to really relate to him, to connect to him. You know, think about how long a dating situation is going to last. If you show up to date and you're like, I mean, I was thinking about a couple of things, but like, I don't know. Anyway, I kind of spaced out, but it was kind of cool. I had something fun to eat today, but that's what I'm really thinking about right now is that really great sandwich that I had today, which kind of reminds me of like that time I went to the park. Now I'm back. Oh man, no, I went to Disneyland one time, but it was still open. That was really cool. Anyway, and oh man, but you know, I'm really, I was fighting with a brother then, and I'm having trouble with my brother right now, and like, but whatever, it's not really important. Anyway, and then 2 hours later, you're like, the date's over. You ain't getting a second date. Because you forgot the, by the way, what's your name, right? Like, when you go in and mumble, meaning be real and talk. So again, I'm giving extreme examples, but they're honestly not so crazy, especially when you think about how we mumble our way, how we sleep our way through tefillah so often, and how we need to think about it fresh, is to think about it as, like you said, the words that you used, it's a relationship. Relationships require you to go in ready to put in. And that then you're doing great.
Helps me.
Yeah, those are two different things. When I give emotionally, when I give to my wife,
yeah, it helps you.
I get from that in the relationship, but I never give to her to get from her. That's manipulative. That's not a relationship.
I
don't give to her. I don't sit there and listen to her when she wants to talk to me. Because I know then that she'll, you know, make me a great lunch the next day. So then, because I know that she'll then listen to me because then I'll feel good that I heard her, even though I don't do it for me. Meaning, is it true that I might feel great about our relationship the next morning? 100%. Is it true that we might have, that she might make lunch for me the next day? It could be. You know, like, meaning all those things are. So what are you saying, that you're doing it for you? What do you mean then?
It feels good to like say things that aren't in mind. It helps you emotionally.
Yes. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu does want. Yes. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu does want.
Also.
But you could do that with anyone, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying, yes, Dafka, do that with me. And you are connecting. Yes. I mean, again, I think that it should be a little bit more like HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to connect to me, so I want to share with him so we can be connected like he wants. I think you can tweak it to make it a little bit more selfless. But I think you're in the right zone. I think you're in the right zone. There were a couple other hands. Remind me your name. You're new?
Liba.
Yeah. Yes.
So, like, what are the dawning, like, to get something out of the shop? Like, what are the dawning, like, I want to get a good grace from Dawning to you.
And the Mefarshim talk about that. I don't remember if the Nesivos Shalom talks about that when he goes forward. But he talks about what is the meaning of requests in tefillah. The idea there is, I think he talks about this. We may get into this we're only just once a week. In a week or two, we may get to this very point, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the whole idea is that when I ask for something, I recognize I don't have it. I recognize I can't attain it on my own. And I would only turn to somebody and admit that I don't have it and that I need it, to somebody who I trusted, I could confide in, and who I believe could really take care of me. And that's part of the avodah, is to get to that mental space, to recognize he cares, he wants to know, I trust him, and I know that he's going to take care of me. And that is a very deep relationship in and of itself. And I think he's going to, if I remember correctly from when I learned this, however long ago I learned this, that he's going to get into that very concept. And that there's a lot of depth to the fact that so much of Tefillah Dafka is asking, that requires humility, trust, connectivity. So much of that is a part of the deal. Another thing I want to emphasize, by the way, we'll just throw it in, why not? We're talking about Tefillah. And using that model of even talking to a friend, talking to a spouse, whatever the case may be. That's something also that I don't think that we have necessarily in the same way as generations past. It is hard, and it does feel forced to daven three times a day, or even for you all, to daven, let's say, two times a day. Think about it like this. Think about the value. Think about back when, some people still have this. We still try to hold at least onto family dinner. But think back to times where you had breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or at least breakfast and dinner with your spouse. Breakfast and dinner with your family. Let's actually focus on the spouse relationship specifically. And think about every single day, breakfast and dinner, morning and night, you sit down and you talk. And you talk and you talk and you talk. Are you always going to have meaningful things to say? No. Sometimes you're just going to shoot the breeze. Sometimes it's going to be like you're just sitting around and nothing deep happened that struck you that day. And you're just schmoozing. What's the value of that? You don't have the example of a spouse? Think about it in terms of roommates. If you've ever had a roommate that you've roomed with who you're actually very close with. And it's a roommate where every single night when you come back to the room, you guys can sit and talk for an hour or two. You guys can just sit and talk and sit and talk and sit and talk. And so many times you just sit and talk about nothing. But you just love to hang out with each other, so you just schmooze. There's a value there just in time put in. If you've ever been in a moment of deep personal crisis, if you've ever been in a moment of deep personal pain, and you feel you need to talk to someone, so often, the last person you think of is that person that you were close to years ago, but it was always deep. Who's the person that you go to? It's that person that you talk to day in and day out, day in and day out, day in and day out. That consistency of communication, that consistency of connectivity, that allows for when that moment comes when you really just need to be you and share what you're going through. So often, that's the person that you go to. Again, in your stage of life, if you have a roommate like that, that's amazing. Or somebody just in seminary in general like that, that's amazing. Who you talk to, that you sit at the table at the meals every day. You sit in the room and schmooze with every day. That consistency of day in and day out, of day in and day out, of day in and day out. Then when that moment comes, again, with a spouse, halavai, we all make time every single day, especially the beginning of marriage. For all of marriage, Bezrat Hashem. But especially the beginning of marriage. When there aren't kids, and work hasn't ramped up, and life hasn't ramped up, and responsibilities haven't ramped up. That's the idea of Shana Rishona, but it should go along beyond Shana Rishona. That you sit there and you just talk. Then suddenly when things need to come out, they're able to come out. What tefillah is an opportunity to make sure that you touch base, you connect three times a day or two times a day, that you just connect, you just touch base. And this I can tell you from experience, from simply davening three times a day every single day. Every single day. And Corona gave me the opportunity to reconnect with davening b'yechidus. It used to always be every day with a minion, but this year, that definitely has not been the case. There were many times where you couldn't daven with a minion. But to daven, no matter what, three times a day, every single day. that when that moment comes, when I just am ready to break down, I mean, I'm constantly in dialogue with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He's right there, because we're talking all the time. On a more human level, my wife is certainly there. And I've definitely had moments over the last 6 months where I've just broken down. Nobody knows when those moments were. Nobody knows what happened, and nobody knows where it happened, except for one person in the entire planet, in the entire universe. Just my wife. Because I can be that human and that vulnerable with her. But that comes from the day in and day out. The day in and day out. What's tefillah modeled after? The korban tamid. That's the value of the korban tamid. It doesn't matter what day of the year it is. It doesn't matter whether it's weekday, Shabbos, Chag, Yom Kippur. Doesn't matter. Every day we touch base. Every day is korban tamid. That's gone. What do we have in its place? The continuity, the consistency, the connectivity of tefillah. Yeah. And then we're actually going to... I'm going to try to get to the end of these. Yeah.
Are you allowed to tell Hashem Lashon Hara?
I think so. I've never heard it before. I don't know if it's a weird question. It's definitely a unique question. But I mean, first of all, if you're sharing because it's something which is striking you that you need to like work through emotionally, that's not even necessarily Lashon Hara to begin with. Oh. But if you're just like, God,
no.
you gotta hear this. You won't believe what she did. You don't believe what she wore. First of all, he knows because he's God. And he was also wondering why she picked that outfit. That's number one. Number two is, that I don't think is valuable in and of itself. But if you're talking about working something emotionally, ayin hilchos lashon hara, lav dafka, that even if you tell a close friend that because it's paining you or you need to work through it emotionally, that's not even necessarily lashon hara. So kal vachomer, yes, you could talk to Kadosh Baruch Hu about that. Again, use your own language. Think about it like a relationship. Meaning, first of all, of course you can. And yeah, my wife tells me the same stories at least once a month. She always likes the certain stories she loves. She's like, oh, I got to tell you this. What? I'm saying but she's excited about it. She's not doing it because like there's nothing to fill the space with. She's like, oh, remember that story I told you 18 times? And like for me, that would just be like, yeah, tell me the story. I can't wait to hear it. It's not the one with this beginning, middle, and end. Again, right? You take it, and you're like, you know, either you laugh about it together or you listen. Meaning, like, the point is, are you being real? That's really the question.
Also, like, you're in there and changing from the Shabbos class, so, like, obviously you're going to say the same thing.
I don't know, maybe I'm just an emotional person, but Shachar to Mincha from 6 a.m. until 1 p.m., a lot happens. So there's a lot of teaching and a lot of talking with students and a lot of prep and a lot of responding to WhatsApps from the night before to family.
Yeah, a lot is changing.
But stuff happened. And like, again, if you're talking to somebody, again, I've walked through the halls of a seminary when it's not during Corona. You guys are talking all the time. Nothing can stop you. Meaning, like, I imagine that there's enough going on from Shachar to Mincha that there's something to say. It may not always be the deepest thing. And yes, it may just be like, God, you know, like, I know I asked you this in the morning, but I'm still really, it's really hurting me. I really would love your help with this. But even in that word still, I'm still in pain, and I'm still turning to you. That word still is a change. Meaning, it's new because it's a different time. It's different, that's real. The point is to be real. The bottom line, again, which is our bumper sticker of the shear, is to be real. That's the bottom line. Let's take it to the end of the introduction. The first one is Yeshuot, period. Yeshuot, period. It's in the middle of the middle paragraph. Middle of the middle paragraph. Yeshuot, period. The Hainu. Ki milvad kol ha'inyanim ha'gvohim sheish batfilah. Besides for all of the tremendously lofty things that there are in tefillah. Od ma'ala yitera la sheish ba pituach lev yudi she'orbo oroi parach. There's the fact that we're opening up our hearts to receive the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're opening ourselves up. We're breaking open our hearts to not just to pour out the tefillah, but also to receive. Like you said, Adina, there's also things that you gain from that process. That by opening up, then mamela, automatically, we're also receiving God's light through that tefillah. Because I opened up to share, I'm also receiving. I'm receiving God's light in that space. The Chazal kavu gimel tefilas b'yom, and Chazal made three tefilas in the day. Shekimel pa'amim b'yom, three times a day, tzarich la'avod al pituach aliv. We need to tend to it. If we don't, it's going to close up. It's going to turn to rock again. We need to go back again at Shacharis, again at Mincha, again at Maariv. For you guys, at least at Shacharis and Mincha, to go back twice a day every day. For me, three times a day every day. Guys are a little thicker, right? We need to go three times a day every day to go back again and again and again and again to keep it open, to keep it flowing. V'gimel pa'amim b'yom yitabekim kono, three times a day to cling to our Creator, to cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Be'ofen sheyishmoret kesher tmidi beino levin aviv shebashamayim, in a way that we're keeping a continuous connection between ourselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. U'kimo dichtiv, as it says in Tehillim, Erev v'voker v'tzorayim asicha v'emeh v'yishma koli. At the night, in the morning, in the afternoon, I go and I talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when He hears my voice. The Chassidim Arishonim and the original Chassidim, right? Chassidim Arishonim, the original Chassidim. Hayu shohim sha'achat. The Gemara brings down, it's wild. The Chassidim Arishonim, they would wait 1 hour. 1 hour they would spend, not waiting, they would spend 1 hour. Kodem atfila, before davening. Getting into tefillah. 1 hour davening. V'achar kach atfila, v'achar kach sha'achar atfila. 3 hours after tefillah. That meant for Shacharis, Mincha, and Maariv, three times a day, 9 hours a day in tefillah, the Chassidim Rishonim. 1 hour just getting into that meditative state. 1 hour in the process of tefillah itself. And because it's such a transformative experience, 1 hour just coming down and processing the experience. You know, what stands out more in terms of the dating realm, it's also true, you know, nowadays when I talk to my wife, we have like a really deep conversation. But especially when you're just, you know, head over heels and your whole mind is only focused on the person. When you're dating the person you're going to marry and you go on that date and you spend 3, 4, 5 hours together, when you part ways, you then start to obsessively replay every moment of that date, every aspect of that conversation. Why? Because you're processing it. They weren't wasting their time. They didn't spend 6 hours a day davening and 3 hours a day wasting their time slowly floating down like a deflating balloon. Right? That wasn't the goal in the last hour after each tefillah. It was active, meaningful processing of that experience that I just touched the infinite. 9 hours a day they spent davening. 1 hour to meditate and get into it. 1 hour to be in it. 1 hour to process and come back down. 9 hours a day. Nimsa shetet sha'ot bayom ayu eslam kodesh li'inyan tefillah. For 9 hours a day they were getting into tefillah. Ula orzen, in light of this last paragraph, last few lines. Ula orze, muvnim divrei hagaon hakadosh Rav Chaim Vital. This is how we can understand the words of Rav Chaim Vital. She'acharei shenitkalkalu ha'avirim ein etzah lehinatzel meyitzahara el al yedei tefillah b'chavana. That now in our day and age, the only way to overcome the yitzahara is through intent, through kavana in tefillah. Ki ha'tefillah miftachat lev yudi she'yeh davuk l'aviv shebashamayim ervok v'tzorayim. Because tefillah is the way that we open up our hearts to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu morning, day, morning, afternoon, and evening. It's the three times we make sure to keep open that passageway, to keep open that connection, to keep open that pipeline that keeps us connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uvazeh yishmor tamid al hadvekut im kono. And this is how we're able to always guard our connection to our Creator. Hatfila hi anikuda ha'ikarit sh'al yehudi le'echozba. Tefillah is the central point that a Jew needs to grab onto, to hold onto for dear life. And that's where all life bursts forth, to all of our spiritual life. Our spiritual life depends on tefillah. Depends on what we put into tefillah. Automatically what then comes out of tefillah. Our whole spiritual life begins and ends with our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that comes through tefillah. Because tefillah gets us into a whole atmosphere, a lofty spiritual atmosphere. To feel close to Him and connectivity and clinging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a little bit, this is just the introduction to tefillah. We haven't even gotten to part one yet. This is the introduction to tefillah. It's so lofty. And we need to take a totally different approach to it. We need to take a totally new approach to it. Not where we go to take from tefillah. Not where we go to give lip service in tefillah. But we're going to work in tefillah. To open up our hearts. To share. To connect. To relate. To put in. to bind ourselves in relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu by talking to Him consistently 3 times a day, 2 times a day, every single day. Bezrat Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the cause to work on our tefillah, to connect to Him, to feel that closeness because of the genuine relationship that we build in our tefillahs every single day. Shkoach, see you guys later this week.